Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault. The legacy that Karl Marx has left behind is blurred forever here in America. Marx's pro-worker, social, and economic theories have not been met with open arms in our pro-business capitalist system, which often pits business owners against its workers in a never-ending battle of how to divide the profits. And failed communist governments and other communist efforts have not been a very good public relations boost for Marx's theories. Marx's theory in communism was so demonized in the United States during the Cold War that it led to the anti-communist hysteria of the 1950s and the House Un-American Activities Commission hearings that destroyed the lives and careers of hundreds of Americans. The HUAC hearings are infamously known for the following question.
Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Communist Party?
But America has adopted several social programs over the years which can in some way be traced back to Marx, Frederick Engels, and other social philosophers of the 18th century. And who better than Howard Zinn, author of A People's History of the United States, to make sense of the very complicated and misunderstood theories of Karl Marx. In 1999, the late Howard Zinn wrote Marx in Soho, a one-man play starring Brian Jones that resurrects Karl Marx to defend his theories and portray him as the human being that he was when he was alive, a family man struggling to support his wife and children. Here we present a condensed version of this play recorded for KPFK Radio in 2001 in Los Angeles.
An audience! Good of you to come. You weren't put off by all those people who said Marx is dead. Well, I am. And I'm not. That's dialectics for you. You might be wondering how I got here. Public transportation. I didn't want to return here. I wanted to return to Soho. That's where I lived in London. But a bureaucratic mix-up. And here I am. Soho, New York. Well, I always wanted to visit New York. Why have I returned? To clear my name. I've been reading your newspapers. They're all proclaiming that my ideas are dead. It's nothing new. These clowns have been saying this for over 150 years. Don't you wonder why is it necessary to declare me dead again and again? Well, I've had it. I asked for the right to come back for a short while. But I told you, there are rules. It's a bureaucracy. It is permitted to read, even to watch, not to travel. I protested, of course, and had some support. Socrates told them the untraveled life is not worth living. Gandhi fasted. Mother Jones threatened to picket. Buddha chanted. Oh. Mark Twain even came to my defense in his own strange way. And the others remain silent. My God, at this point, what have they got to lose? Yes, there too I have a reputation as a troublemaker. And there too, protest works. Finally, they said, all right, you can go. You can have an hour or so to speak your mind. But remember, no agitating. They do believe in freedom of speech, but within limits. They are liberals. So you can spread the word. Marx is back. But understand one thing. I am not a Marxist. I once said that to Pieper and he almost croaked. I should tell you about Pieper. We were living in London at the time. Jenny and I and the little ones. Two dogs. Three cats. Two birds. Hardly living. A little flat on Dean Street, right near where they dumped the city sewage. You see, in London, the political refugees from the continent marched in and out of our house. Pieper was one of them. He was a flatterer, a sycophant. He buzzed around me like a hornet. He would station himself 6 inches from me so that I could not evade him. And he would quote from my writings. I used to say, "Pieper, please do not quote me to myself." He had the audacity to say, thinking I would be pleased, that he would translate Das Kapital into English. The man could not speak one sentence of English without butchering it. English is a beautiful language. It is Shakespeare's language. If Shakespeare had heard Pieper speak one sentence of English, he would have taken poison. Jenny felt sorry for him. She used to like to invite him to our family dinners. One evening he came over and he announced the formation of the Marxist Society of London. A Marxist society, I asked. What's that? He said, "We meet every week to discuss another of your writings. We read aloud and examine sentence by sentence. That's why we call ourselves Marxists. We believe completely and wholeheartedly in everything you've ever written." "Completely and wholeheartedly," I said. "Yes, and we would be honored, Herr Dr. Marx." He always called me Mr. Dr. Marx. No. "If you would address the next meeting of the Marxist Society." "I cannot do that." "Why not?" "Because I am not a Marxist." I didn't mind his bad English. Mine wasn't always so perfect. It was his way of thinking. He was an embarrassment. A satellite, encircling my words, reflecting them to the world, but distorting them. And then defending distortions like a fanatic. I said to Jenny, "Do you know what I fear most?" She said, "That the workers' revolution will never come." I said, "No. That the revolution will come, but it'll be taken over by men like Pieper." Flatterers went out of power. Bullies and braggarts when holding power. Dogmatists. They will speak for the proletariat. They will interpret my ideas for the world. They'll organize a new hierarchy, a new priesthood, with excommunications and indexes, inquisitions and firing squads, all in the name of communism. Dividing the world between capitalist empires and communist empires. They'll muck up our beautiful dream. And it'll take another revolution, maybe two or three, to clean it up. That's what I fear. No, I wasn't going to have Pieper translate Das Kapital. Represented 15 years of work in the conditions of Soho, making my way every morning past the bodies of beggars sleeping amidst the sewage, then on to the British Museum. There, with its magnificent library, working until dusk, reading. Reading. Is there anything more boring than reading political economy? Writing political economy. Then home through the darkening streets, past the vendors calling out the prices of their wares. Veterans of the Crimean War, some blind, others without legs, begging for a penny. The noxious air. Poor smell of London. Yeah. Some of my critics trying to minimize what went into Das Kapital would say, as they always say about radical writers, "Oh, he must have had some dreadful personal experience." Yes. If you want to make much of it, that walk home through Soho fueled the anger that went into Das Kapital. But I hear you saying, "Well, of course, that was then, over a century ago." Only then On my way here this morning, I walked through the streets of your city. Surrounded by garbage, breathing foul air, past the bodies of men and women sleeping on the street, huddled against the cold. Instead of a lassie singing a ballad, I heard a voice in my ear. Some change, sir, for a cup of coffee. And you call this progress? Because you have motor cars, flying machines, 1,000 potions to make you smell better, and people sleeping on the street. An official report. Last year, the United States gross domestic product. Yes, gross. Was $7,000 billion. Most impressive. Tell me, where is it? Who is profiting from it? Who is not? Less than 500 individuals control $2,000 billion in business assets. Are these individuals more noble, more hardworking, more valuable to society than the mother in the tenement, nursing 3 children through the winter without any money to pay the heating bill? Didn't you hear me say 150 years ago that capitalism would greatly increase the wealth of the world, but that that wealth would be concentrated into fewer and fewer hands? Giant merger between Chase Manhattan Bank and Chemical Bank. 10,000 workers to lose jobs. Stocks rise. And they say my ideas are dead. Do you know the Oliver Goldsmith poem? The Deserted Village? Ill fares the land to hastening ills a prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. Yes. Decay. That's what I saw as I walked through the streets of your city. Buildings decaying, schools decaying, people decaying. But then I walked a bit farther, and I was suddenly surrounded by men of obvious wealth, women in jewels and furs. Suddenly I heard the sound of sirens. Was a crime being committed somewhere nearby? Was violence being done? Was somebody trying to take a part of the gross domestic product illegally from those who have stolen it legally? Ah, the wonders of the Marquette system. Human beings reduced to commodities, their lives controlled by the super commodity, money. The committee doesn't like that. In that little flat in Soho, we had hot soup and boiled potatoes. Fresh bread from our friend the baker down the street. We would sit around the dinner table and discuss the latest events of the day. The Irish struggle for freedom. The latest war. The stupidity of the country's leaders. Political opposition confining itself to pips and squeaks. The cowardly press. I suppose things are different these days. After dinner, we would clear the table, and I would work. With a glass of beer and my cigars handy. Yes, work until 3 or 4 in the morning. Books piled up on one side, parliamentary reports piled up on the other. And across the table, Jenny was transcribing. My handwriting was impossible. She rewrote every word I wrote. Can you imagine a more heroic act? Occasionally a crisis. Not a world crisis. A book would be missing. I said to Jenny, have you seen my Ricardo? She said, you mean Principles of Political Economy. She thought I was finished with it. She had taken it to the pawn shop. I lost my temper. My Ricardo! You pawned my Ricardo! She said, be quiet. Just last week, didn't we pawn the ring my mother gave me? That's how it was. We pawned everything. Especially gifts from Jenny's family. And when we were finished with those, we pawned our clothes. One winter, do you know the London winters? I went without my overcoat. Another time I walked outside, my feet began to freeze on the snow. And then I realized I'm not wearing shoes. We had pawned them the day before. When Capital was published, we celebrated with a big dinner. But Engels had to give us some money so we could retrieve our linens and dishes from the pawn shop. Engels. A saint. There's no other word for him. Whenever the water was cut off, the gas cut off, house was dark, our spirits low, Engels paid the bills. His family owned factories in Manchester. Yes, capitalism saved us. But he did not always understand our needs. We had no money for groceries, and he would show up with crates of wine. One Christmas, we had no means to afford a Weihnachtsbaum, a Christmas tree. Engels shows up with 6 bottles of champagne. So we imagined a tree, formed a circle around it, drank champagne, and sang Christmas songs. Now, I know what my revolutionary friends were thinking. Marx, the atheist, a Christmas tree. Yes, it's true. I did say that religion was the opium of the people. But no one has ever paid attention to the full passage. Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature. The heart in a heartless world, the soul of soulless conditions. It is the opium of the people. True. Opium may not be a solution, but sometimes it is necessary to relieve pain. Don't I know that? From my boils. Doesn't the world have a terrible case of the boils? I keep thinking about Jenny, how she loaded up all of our possessions, carried our children across the channel to London, and then gave birth 3 times in that miserable flat on Dean Street. Nursed those babies and tried to keep them warm. And saw them die. One by one. So, when Eleanor was born, we were fearful. She was a tough little thing. She was fortunate to have 2 older sisters, Jenishin and Laura. They were lucky to survive themselves. Jenishin, our first, was born in Paris. Paris is marvelous for lovers, miserable for children. Something about the air. Laura, our second, was born in Brussels. No one should be born in Brussels. In London, we had no money, but we always had family picnics. We'd walk 1.5 miles into the countryside, Jenny and I, the little ones, luncheon. I'll tell you about luncheon. Luncheon would make a roast veal, and we would have tea and cheese and fruit bread and beer. Eleanor was the youngest, but she drank beer. No money, but children need a vacation. One time with the groceries money, I sent them to the Atlantic coast of France. Another time with the rent money, I bought a piano. Because the girls loved music. Now, a father is not supposed to have favorites among his children. But Eleanor. I used to say to Jenny, Eleanor is a strange child. She would say, do you expect the children of Karl Marx to be normal? Eleanor was the youngest, the brightest. Imagine a revolutionary at age 8. That's how old she was in 1863. Poland was in rebellion against Russian rule, and Tussie, that's what we called her, Tussie, wrote a letter to Engels about those brave little fellows in Poland, as she called them. When she was 9, she wrote a letter to America. Advice to President Lincoln on how to win the war against the Confederacy. Also, she smoked and she drank. Still, she was a little child. She would dress up her little dolls while sipping from a glass of wine. I played chess with her when she was 10, and I could not easily defeat her. When she was 14, she became enraged at the law of observing the Lord's Day. No activity was permitted on Sunday. So she organized Sunday evenings for the people. St. Martin's Hall. She brought their musicians to play Handel, Mozart, Beethoven. The hall was packed. 2,000 people. It was completely illegal. And yet, no one was arrested. A lesson. If you're going to do something illegal, do it with 2,000 people. And Mozart. I used to read Shakespeare and Aeschylus and Dante aloud to her and her sisters, which she loved. Her room was a Shakespeare museum. She memorized Romeo and Juliet and insisted that I recite over and over again those lines when Romeo sees Juliet for the first time. The brightness of her cheek would shame those stars as daylight doth a lamp. Her eyes in heaven would, through the airy region, stream so bright that birds would sing and think it were not night. She was not always easy to live with. Oh, no. Do you know how embarrassing it is to have a child who finds flaws in your reasoning? She loved to argue with me about my writings. For instance, my essay on the Jewish question. Difficult to understand, I admit. Eleanor read it and immediately challenged me. She said, why do you single out the Jews as representatives of capitalism? They're not the only ones poisoned by commerce and greed. I said, I'm not singling out the Jews. I'm merely using them as a vivid example. In response, she began to wear a Jewish star. I'm a Jew, she announced. What could I say? I shrugged my shoulders. She said, that's a very Jewish gesture. She could be very annoying. She knew that my father had converted to Christianity. It wasn't convenient to be a Jew in Germany. Is it ever convenient to be a Jew anywhere? She also knew I had been baptized, a fact which intrigued her. She once asked me, Moore, the family called me Moore because of my dark complexion. She said, Moore, I know you were baptized, but first you were circumcised, weren't you? Nothing embarrassed that girl. At such times, she was impossible. For instance, alongside her Jewish star, she began to wear a crucifix. Not because she was enamored of Christianity, but of the Irish and their struggle against British rule. She learned all about it from Lizzie Burns. Engels, love. Now, Lizzie was a mill girl and could not read. Engels spoke 9 languages. You would think this would make it difficult for them to communicate, but they were in love. Lizzie was very involved in the Irish struggle. Eleanor would visit all the time. The two of them would stay up all night and drink wine and sing Irish songs until they both fell asleep on the floor. There was that time, though. That terrible time when they hanged 2 young Irishmen right there in Soho with a drunken crowd cheering. Those genteel English with their afternoon tea and their public hangings. I understand you don't do that anymore. Only gas people inject poison into their veins. burn them with electricity. Much more civilized.